Movie.
I'm a bit of a cinephile.
Yodelay, MFers. Have you ever wanted to barbecue your lover? Yeah, me neither. You're listening to Movie.
Movie.
Film.
Film. It's a podcast where we pick a flick and decide if it's a movie or a film. I'm Nate, and well, it looks like the real Zodiac killer was friendship.
And I'm Terrell. And look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
I don't know.
The Omen.
Could have guessed that because of the name Damien.
Damien?
Yeah.
It's the demon child name. And yours is Zodiac?
I did say the name of the movie in the quote. made it easy for you. It was that, or Methinks Our Friend's a Tad Bit Fuckered in the Head.
Ooh, well, that's a nice one. What's that from?
It's also Zodiac.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's choosing between Zodiac quotes because we're talking about the first serial killer movie, M.
M.
Yeah, taking it back to 1931.
This is now our oldest picture to date.
Yeah. Before we talk about that, though, let's talk about some stuff we've watched.
Yeah.
Recently.
We had a Mother's Day. We had an early Mother's Day.
Yes.
This probably would have been better for the Mother of George podcast last week.
I think that inspired it.
Yeah, it definitely inspired it. And we watched, like, I watched, like, two. Right? I watched two Mother movies. You watched, like, four.
Looking at my Letterboxd on the 10th, I've logged Mother, 96, Mother, 2009, Mother, 2017, Black Mother, 2018, Mamma Mia, 2008, and Ma, 2019.
And Ma, yeah. So, which one you want to talk about first?
which mother?
Which mother?
Let's talk about Mother.
Mother!
Because that's the one that's, like, the most... conversation starting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
That's the movie you watch and you need to...
You need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you watch it and you're just like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, it fits in for me with what we were doing this month with trying to watch movies we'd been meaning to see for a while. And I was always on the fence about this because... Darren Aronofsky takes big swings. I wasn't a big fan of Noah, and I knew that this one had some biblical inspirations.
Yeah, very heavy with that.
But I liked it for the most part. It was an experience.
Yeah, it's an experience. It's I watched this like a while ago when it was like on Hulu. It's not on Hulu anymore. And it's kind of slow. It's kind of a slow picture. But it really picks up.
Yeah, it starts out slow. I wouldn't call it on a whole slow because there's huge escalation in the pacing. In the back end.
The back end. That back end is real juicy. You know what I mean?
I didn't know what you
mean. Now you know what I mean.
I was scared that the movie would be a lot of the back of Jennifer Lawrence's like head.
It was a good amount. Because
he does a lot of tracking shots. It's mostly the front of her face, though. And I liked Javier Bardem as him. That's his characters.
Yeah.
I didn't look up the names of the characters until now. That's kind of stupid.
It's like, yeah, they mother, him, man, woman... And then...
Younger brother, older son. He couldn't just call him Cain and Abel?
Yeah. I mean, that's who they are. But, yeah, it's interesting how mysterious this movie was trying to be. How coy it was trying to be with the names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the violence was filmed in a way that's pretty harrowing.
Especially... the baby scene.
Yeah, there's some unsavory things involving an infant.
And some nice little cannibalism. which is just poking at a common practice, I'll say.
Cannibalism.
They ate the baby.
And you're saying that's a common practice?
No. Like the I guess the metaphor of eating the body drinking the blood.
Okay, of Christ.
But in that one, it was like...
Sorry, I thought you were normalizing cannibalism.
No.
Because I know you opened up with that Armie Hammer reference.
Yeah. No. I'm not trying to normalize it. That's crazy.
This podcast does not endorse cannibalism.
No, it just does
of any kind. Well, no. The metaphorical kind in Mother, we somewhat condone.
Mm-hmm.
For artistic purposes, okay?
Only.
It's art. All right.
Yeah, I'm glad you finally got to see Mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about Mother.
Bong Joon-ho Mother.
Yeah, let's talk about that Mother. Because that was a bit of a twisty ride.
That one is on Hulu.
Yes. Yes, it is. I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was going to be like kind of like a murder mystery, which is kind of how it presents itself. But like Parasite, there's a bit more to it. Just
yeah.
A little bit more to it. And really like it turns on you for thinking that you got it figured out, for thinking that you have, you know, you think you're ahead of the movie, but it's ahead of you. Yeah. And there's just no way to catch it until it's already in front of you. Like, hi, here I am. This is what I've been the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was interesting to see.
Yeah, it makes for a pretty fun rewatch, which it was my second time watching it. Kim Hyja's performance as Mother, it's just amazing. Such a well-written character and amazingly performed. And you don't see that in American cinema, those kinds of older women getting into, I'll say, hijinks.
Yeah, it is hijinks.
Yeah. Just really dark, but also really funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good one.
It's a good one.
I liked all the Mothers, all the Mother movies I watched.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a mama's boy.
Same. Ma.
Yes.
Watched Ma for, this was my second time watching it, your first time watching it.
Yes.
I talked about it, I want to say, when it came out in 2019, and I was kind of lukewarm on it, but watching it this time with you, was much better.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I, like, picked up on some of your laughing cues, and it, like, made me laugh more at it.
There was a surprise Allison Janney in this movie. I came for Octavia Spencer. I stayed for Octavia Spencer. But when I love it when like the character actors like support their own when one of them gets a lead role.
Mm-hmm.
So Allison Janney shows up and
yeah,
just great.
Just
great
stuff. Out of the park.
And the tone of that movie is really interesting. It just starts off right away with the off-kilter tone. Something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And those kids suck.
Yeah. No, they're not great kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not enjoy the kids the first time, nor the second time.
Yeah.
But Ma was definitely worse. Ma was definitely worse.
Hurt people.
Yeah. And she was really hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else have you watched?
Well... I watched three movies.
Okay.
That feature at least two songs by the Swedish pop group ABBA. And it was not intentional.
Okay.
One of them was intentional. One of them, as I mentioned, was Mamma Mia. I knew what I was getting into.
Yep.
Did
you watch Mamma Mia 2?
Not this time.
Okay.
I don't know that one's necessary to revisit.
Okay.
Yeah. But I watched, like 10 days ago, Muriel's Wedding from 1994, an Australian comedy starring Toni Collette.
Mm.
And she is ABBA obsessed. And she is a character.
When isn't she?
Everyone hates her. she's just like that person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, it's Muriel. and it's fun to see her from the 90s in like a weird comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then today, to get in some serial killing movies in preparation for M, I watched Summer of Sam, which features two songs from ABBA.
And were you surprised? Like, hey, ABBA again.
Yes. opening credits, you get, I forget which one it is. Dancing Queen's in there too, though.
Oh. It's the one. It's the one.
Yeah, I forget which ABBA song opened the movie, but it is a good one. That's like one of the few Spike Lee movies that I didn't watch last year.
Mm-hmm.
About the Son of Sam murders. Well, more so about how those murders affect the Bronx. Specifically Italian-American men in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
What?
I was going to say it's low-key been an ABBA week for me. Because, like, Mamma Mia, and then I, like, played some ABBA at work. And, nice. Like, Take a Chance on Me has been stuck in mm-hmm. my head. And I've just been singing that, like, since we watched Mamma Mia.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, ABBA's great. And to just have like that music playing in like a movie about a serial killer, like mm-hmm. it puts you in the time, perhaps 77, but also just like the upbeat like soundtrack to paranoia and fear.
Yeah.
Works really well. It's long, but it's Spike Lee, and
yeah.
There are some really great montages and sequences in there. So I liked it. Also features my favorite Spike Lee performance in a Spike Lee movie.
Mm-hmm.
He plays like a newscaster. So like every so often they cut back to his character and he's like the reporter on the street guy.
Is he kind of narrating or?
Not in a way, though the movie uses different techniques to give information.
Okay.
But that's one of them. And then also some humor through there, especially in an interlude where the whole movie's about these Italian American guys. It's like John Leguizamo and Danny Aiello, but there's like a segment where his reporter character is like, trying to see, he goes to Bed-Stuy to see what the black community thinks. and it's just funny. And he gets roasted by the folks in Bed-Stuy who don't care about the Son of Sam.
Though. It was a light week for me. I got one more movie that I could talk about.
All right.
We watched Prisoners. It was my first time watching it.
I've been trying to get you to watch it for so long.
I know. You thought I was going to say no, which is why I said yes.
Well, did you know it was 2.5 hours when I said yes?
I did not know it was 2.5 hours. Towards the end, I was like, oh my goodness, it's almost 11 o'clock. Like, it's a hefty one. But it is very captivating.
Yes.
The story, the acting, especially just like Hugh Jackman really like carries that.
Yeah, he's scary.
On his shoulders.
His character scares me.
Yeah.
People like that. And I feel like he captures it really well.
He really did. He got, he was really intense in that.
His favorite song is the Star Spangled Banner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it fit right in line with him. Because of the subject matter, and just more modern, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a nice treat to get Viola Davis and Terrence Howard in there as well.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah,
really soft Terrence Howard performance.
Yeah, really soft Terrence Howard. Just like
in a very dark movie, like super dark movie, but he doesn't.
Yeah, he's not the dark one. He's he has the like. Yeah, the internal struggle that's more outward than Hugh Jackman character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hugh Jackman can act. That guy is an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely recommend, speaking of Allison Janney and Hugh Jackman, Bad Education from last year on HBO. I mean, this and that are probably my two favorite Jackman performances.
Mm-hmm.
But regarding Prisoners, got to shout out my guy, Roger Deakins, with the cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
Just those shots, like, through windshields, like, on stormy, like, in the rain, and the way the lights come through.
Yeah.
He's got the best eye.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it so much. And then I felt, I felt, like, so attached to everyone. I was like, oh, everyone's a victim. Like, I felt bad for everyone.
Yeah, what is the title Prisoners? Who do you think that refers to?
Yeah, like,
the whole bunch, right?
Yeah, all of them. Yeah. Like, prisoners to, like, their emotions, to themselves, to, like, their, like, surroundings. It was very good. And it was, like, a nice pick-me-up after M.
Did it picked you up?
That's crazy, right?
It's a weird way to describe that movie.
It's a weird way to describe it. I just mean as far as just like, I don't know, modernness goes. Because, you know, we'll talk about M. We'll get into it. But just having like ambiance, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Definitely like it picked me back up.
Yeah. Good Jake Gyllenhaal performance in Prisoners also. And I did watch.
He had that cop hairstyle. I just hate it. I was just like, oh, look at that hair.
I still think of that as the Macklemore haircut.
Kind of, yeah. It is. It is.
So I also watched Zodiac in my serial killing movies days. I got to watch Memories of a Murder, because a Bong Joon-ho movie. And I still need to watch Stranger by the Lake. Yes. So, we'll see. I might get some more serial killing movies in for next week. But the last movie I just want to bring up is Bad Trip, which came out last year. It stars Eric Andre and Lil Rel. And it's like filmed in like the Borat Jackass Bad Grandpa style. Oh, Tiffany Haddish. Got to mention her too.
Mm-hmm.
They're all so good in it. And yeah, they're so good for that type of movie where most like the scenes are shot as stunts or as pranks in public featuring unsuspecting real people. And the whole movie follows the trajectory of, like, grown-ups or, like, any random bad studio comedy, except that everything's in public, and you get the real reactions of, like, how actual people would respond in that situation. And just first of all, it's just fucking hilarious. It's the most I've laughed in a while to a movie. And I was also just very taken with how the story was told. Like, really impressed that it worked.
Nice. I'm going to check it out on your word, because I was like, I'm not really into, I guess, just like movies where they use like real people reactions. Like, not so much my thing. But I'll give it a try. I'll check it out. I like Eric Andre. I like Lil Rel. I like Tiffany. Like, that's a great trio.
Yeah, I'd be happy to rewatch that with you. I think it's coming to Netflix at some point.
Okay.
All right. Well.
It would have turned.
Yeah. I actually didn't look up if there even is a trailer of M to cut to right here. There's probably like a DVD release trailer.
Perhaps.
Maybe I can find like an old timey thing.
Hmm.
But let's
play the trailer?
Play something. M.
Du hast aber einen schönen Ball.
Extra Skalett! Extra Skalett! Extra Skalett! zu schicken.
Was wollen Sie mit Herrn Mörs?
Aus bestimmten Anzeichen geht hervor, dass auch dieser neue Mord von demselben gespenstischen Unhold begangen wurde, dem bereits 8 Kinder unserer Stadt zum Opfer gefallen sind.
M is a 1931 German thriller directed by Fritz Lang, starring Peter Lorre in his breakthrough role as Hans Becker, a serial killer of children.
Yeah.
This movie's old as fuck.
As old as sliced bread. This is my pick again. I haven't wanted to watch this since college. I think in a course I was taking, they played a clip from it for as an example. It's the clip where he's whistling and then the shadow comes up on the poster. I remember. And I was like, ooh, what is this? This looks really interesting. And then I just never got to it. Never happened. So I was like, this is like the perfect opportunity to finally get to M.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we did it. I'm glad that I checked it off my list finally.
Yeah. I liked it. It's different watching a movie from 1931. It's a different experience.
Yeah, you have to like adjust to it. You know? Like with anything, you just have to be like, okay, this is older. There are certain things that they weren't able to do as far as like sound goes and just like camera movement. But
and for 1931, the stuff they did with sound and camera movement was probably incredible.
Incredible. Yeah. Blew people minds, you know, and just, you know, a great performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't let me down. I mean, it didn't let me down. I think we watched it twice.
Yeah, I didn't need to watch it twice.
I did. Because the first watch, I was lost.
Mm-hmm.
I was lost. I didn't understand why things were happening, why characters were doing certain things. Like, I missed the whole part where, like, the criminals came together and decided that they were going to catch him because he was making them look bad. So I was just like, what's with the two groups? Why don't the cops understand, you know, what was going on in that building? And then the second time I was like, okay, this makes way more sense. And then that scene where the criminals are talking and the cops are talking, like that whole, the way that's like intercut with one another is actually pretty cool. And it worked for me better the second time and I was able to follow it more. And so I enjoyed it more the second time. Yeah.
I just think it's long and kind of slow.
It's long and kind of slow.
I missed some stuff the first time too, but I just read the Wikipedia and that connected for me. So I was just kind of bored the second time, but that's okay.
It's a hot and cold movie. Like there are certain parts that are just like really hot where it's just like the pacing is just like moving. It's really tight. And there's certain points where it's just like they kill that momentum and it's just dialogue heavy and it just goes on for too long. But I mean, the really cool thing about M is that it finds a way to, like, build it back up. Like, it doesn't lose it. And it ends, I mean, that not the very ending, but, like, the court scene, like, the people's court scene is actually really, really, really cool.
Yeah.
Like, when he turns around and they're all just looking at him. Well, yeah, it's really cool.
I feel like we just did it. Is it a movie or a film?
Is it a movie? Let's talk about this thing.
They start off with the kids chanting.
Yeah. They're doing like a game of eliminations. Like when we were kids, you used to play tag and you had to figure out who was it. And you would do like, my mother punched your mother in the nose. What color was the blood?
I never did that.
Green. And then you would do G-R-E-E-N. You're out on the end. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. But I mean, it's kind of like that because like punching mothers in the nose is kind of fucked up. The song is about the child murders as well. So it's still, the songs are still pretty fucked up.
It's about which child is going to be killed next.
Yeah.
And the camera moves up to the balcony and the children are yelled at by a woman to stop singing that horrible song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she's told, hey, by another woman, as long as the kids are singing, at least we know they're alive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we see that there is a like a poster for a $10,000 marks reward for a murderer.
Yes.
And a little girl is in front of it, and she's playing with a ball. And it's a really cool shot. This is the shot that got me interested in this picture. On the poster, you see the shadow of a man approach the little girl and start to talk to her.
Yeah, Elsie Beckman.
Elsie.
And we see her mother setting the table for lunch for mm-hmm. her daughter to come home. But, prepping dinner. She does not.
She does not come home with the other kids. She's later than usual.
Becker, our murderer, is whistling mm-hmm. In the Hall of the Mountain King by Edward Grieg. The da 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 da.
Mm-hmm. And he buys the girl a balloon. He buys it from a blind man.
He could have been blonde. It was a black and white movie. True, we have no idea. Could have, you mm-hmm. know.
And so now the mother is starting to get worried. She's calling out, Elsie. But there's nothing. And on the last call, Elsie, we see that the ball that she was playing with rolls out from the bushes. And the balloon that the man bought her is caught in electrical wires.
Yeah, we got to talk about the balloon, though. Because it's not just a balloon.
It's just not a regular balloon.
Somehow, in early 1930s Germany, balloon technology was more advanced than it is in 2020 everywhere else.
Yeah.
It's like a balloon guy.
It's a balloon guy, yeah. There's like a balloon body, and then there's like paper arms and legs.
Yeah, real fun.
Yeah.
but also, like, when it gets stuck in the telephone wire, it looks like a child.
Yeah.
In danger now.
Yeah, in danger.
It's interesting. Also, just regarding the whistling, and this was like one the first movie to use a leitmotif, which is like linking a specific sound to the character.
Mm-hmm.
Something we talked about for a while on the Hamilton podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty interesting. It was a device in operas, but Fritz Lang realized, hey, I can take this and add it to the movies.
Interesting.
Also, it's him whistling, not Peter Lorre, who couldn't whistle.
Peter couldn't whistle?
Nope.
So it's the news break. Extra, 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 read all about it.
Yeah, it's like an echoey sound collage.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
everyone in town gets the paper.
Mm-hmm. Beckhardt writes directly to the press, because he wrote to the police before and they did not print his letter. And he promises that he's not done yet in his letter.
Mm-hmm. While he's whistling.
While he's whistling. The town, they all gather and they read the news out loud. And it pretty much it says that anyone could be the murderer,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is like the worst thing you could do. As a press, right, is like spread fear.
Yeah,
and that's what it did, and it created just like this fear mongering.
Sells papers.
Mm-hmm. And now everyone is scared. And it takes no time for the accusations to start rolling. In fact, it's like a group of men at a table, and as soon as they're done reading it, one of them is just like, "It's you,"
mm-hmm.
right? And because it's like the crime is so heinous, it creates this like this fight almost
mm-hmm.
where like they have to be pulled apart, and the town is on high alert. There's like this older man that's just talking to a little girl, and then these two bystanders are looking at him whispering, and then this really big guy comes over and places his hand on his shoulder like, "It's you. You're the murderer."
Everyone surrounds him,
calling him the murderer. It gets real, real crazy really fast. So, like, no one is the murderer. I mean, yeah, no one is the murderer means everyone's the murderer.
Yeah, it's almost had like a mother situation.
I like the way you say mother.
Got to differentiate.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's this cool thing when the police are reading the letter. It cuts back to Beckert, and he's doing the opening frames of Todd Phillips' Joker.
I wrote that.
Yeah. There's a lot of things in this movie that you pick up on being copied elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And
it's pretty easy to imagine this being the first. The letters to the police from the serial killer. I mean, that was a huge part of Zodiac and just like serial killers in reality possibly being inspired.
Yeah.
Summer of Sam deals really well with just the paranoia of anyone could be the killer.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, he's checking himself in the mirror, making like a frowny face. And there's like this voiceover of this man talking about the psyche of whoever mm-hmm. this could be. This scene is one of the like the long scenes that kind of like drag on.
Yeah, and it did not generate too many notes for me.
Yeah.
Despite its length.
Yeah, so his letter gets published and the head of the police thinks it's a terrible idea. Because he's just like, the cops are overworked. And they don't have any evidence. The only evidence they have is like this candy wrapper that they found near the scene. And the cops aren't sleeping and they're all on patrol all the time. And there's so many false leads, pretty much. That's the conversation, but much, 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 much longer.
Next thing I got is the raid.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the police start to like sweep, doing nightly sweeps every night. So people are in a bar and they are being like detained pretty much. Like the cops crash the party.
Yeah. It's where all the criminals hang out.
Mm-hmm. And they're just like, show me your papers.
Yeah. You get a good, they're here. Everyone hide, scramble.
Yeah.
You get a good one of those.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we're already caught. So
yeah,
nothing we can do.
And then, there's this whole moment when, the chief inspector Lohman, who everyone calls Tubby Lohman, he comes out. And they have a song, like a theme song for Tubby Lohman, the sergeant.
The cops get no respect.
That's great.
There's one lady who's like spitting on the cops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are really hard for criminals.
But then there's, just a drawn-out sequence of papers being checked now.
Yeah.
And it just seems to be a very ineffective, what, like, how is that going to be how they catch the murderer?
They're not. Because they're pretty much taking everyone to the station.
Yeah, it's just
you can't win.
Good portrait of the ineffectiveness of
even when you flirt. Policing.
Yeah.
Even when you flirt. There's a nice little flirt scene in there, and that guy, he still gets taken to the station.
The everyone in the underworld, they're getting tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman running the restaurant is yelling at the inspector that he's driving business out.
Yeah.
Hurting her money.
Yeah, and even the criminals, like, they hate this. Whoever's doing this, they hate him.
Yeah.
Like, they want him just as much as you. Their heart weeps for the children.
Right. We have a scene with Der Schranker, which translates to the safecracker. And he's getting together all the crime lords.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to take some matters in their own hands.
Yeah.
Get organized.
Mm-hmm. They're going to get organized. It's pretty cool. Because while they're getting organized, the police are also holding a meeting.
And this is the meeting where the one guy is like, what about that magician who does tell us something? Like, he can't even remember the word for telekinesis, which is a terrible idea anyway.
Yeah. He makes pennies disappear. Like, I don't even know where he was going with that.
Yeah, it's just pretty funny that they have no idea what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's contrasted with the criminals who have a very clever idea to utilize this network of beggars.
Yeah.
To watch the streets.
Yeah, they both... the cops and the criminals both come up with like a plan,
mm-hmm.
pretty much. The criminals being the best, really.
Yeah.
is just to like use the community, use the organization of beggars to like for surveillance because they need eyes everywhere. And the cops want to do like tougher raids and higher rewards. And the cops end up on that whoever this is probably has a background with like the law or maybe like has like a record. So they start looking into like clinics and
the history of psychiatric
asylums and all that stuff. So now the plans are starting to like form and come together and get in motion.
Yeah, there's this one cafe scene just with camera work that's pretty dynamic. Like the camera's like gliding through the cafe and you can just tell it was probably super exciting for the time to see a camera like go through a window into a room. Definitely the kinds of moves we take for granted.
Yeah, like that transition, and it's like the one transition too.
Oh yeah, it's like the camera tilts matches up. The color of the wall.
I bet people was like, whoa. I could tell. They were very proud of that transition. So the beggars are watching, right? Yeah. You see them watching the kids, watching men. And the cops start looking into like harmless released men from asylums. Like they have like this book pretty much, like a folder full of names. And they actually...
German authorities of that time loved their paperwork.
Yeah. They actually... I don't know how long it took them to get to Beckhart, but we see them get there pretty quickly.
They get to his rooms that he rented. And they get some evidence. They can tell from... He was scratching his paper so hard that it went into the table. So they figure out that that's where he wrote the letter. So they're just going to wait for him to show up.
But he's actually out on the town, Beckhart. And
On the prowl.
He likes to buy fruit. He buys fruit. And he's like looking, he's like window shopping, and he's like his face is in a mirror in a window. And then in that mirror we also see a little girl in the back. And you can see like this trance happen where he like changes. It's almost like this Dr. Jekyll and Hyde situation, and it's just like this like lust, this need to like get this girl takes over him.
Yeah, but that girl, he follows her, but she ends up with her mother.
Yeah.
And then guess what? There's more little girls out there.
Yeah.
So he finds another and she didn't get the message to not speak to strangers. Cause she's just like friends with him now. But the blind,
there's always one child or there's always a child that's just like unattended, I suppose. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The blind, balloon vendor, who's one of the members of the beggar network. So he's on the lookout. Or is he even? Yeah, he is. And he's blind, but he can hear and he recognizes the whistling.
Yeah.
It's the same whistling that he heard with Elsie Beckman in the beginning. So he tells one of his friends, who then follows the killer and the girl.
Yeah. He's able to tell him and just watch him very closely. And then he writes the letter M.
Wait, I got to talk about the toy store that they stop at for a second. Because these ads in 1931 Germany, it's just, they're just completely not hiding the fact that they're trying to brainwash little kids. It's literally the brainwash spiral in the window of the toy store.
The pointer and then thing.
An arrow, a giant arrow that just goes up and down commanding your attention.
Yeah. I feel like it's also being like she's the target, like exactly, like it's pointing at her. She's like in the center of the target. Yeah. So the man, he writes M on his hand
with chalk,
and then he runs up on Beckhart and he just touches him on the back.
It bumps into him, yeah.
And this kind of startles Beckhart. He's now weary. He's just like, "What was that?"
Yeah, like the thing where before, like, as he's drawing the M on his hand, getting ready, Becker, like, takes a knife out and you think, uh-oh, the murder is going to happen now, but yeah. It's just a peel and orange.
Yeah.
And then when the guy trips into Becker, the guy says, are you crazy dropping orange peels? Someone could trip and break their neck. And then he goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But he marked him.
Yeah. The cops, meanwhile, are waiting at his place.
Yeah, just chilling.
Just chilling. They're like, cut off the lights. He'll get suspicious if he comes home and the lights are on. So they're just waiting for him.
And the little girl with Becker is a little too observant for her own good.
Because
she notices the M.
Yeah, and tells him about it. And a little bit right before she told him about the M, there's this really cool scene just to show how organized the beggars were, because because they wanted to follow him, but they didn't want him to like look back and see the same person over and over.
Yeah.
So they kind of play like tag or like they relay.
Rotated, yeah.
Yeah. It's like a relay. And so there's a different person following him, but they have him in their sights at all times.
Yeah. But once he realizes he's marked, he, notices he's being watched, so he gets out of there and leaves his target.
And now,
to live.
to live. And he tries to run, but then like there's like whistling all around him.
Yeah.
In every direction. He's like, oh man, where do I run? And so he's trying to run, and then they start popping out in all directions. And he's just like, it's kind of like a standstill for a moment. Behind him is like this building.
Yeah, it's an office building, and the workers are about to leave, but he gets in right before they leave, and they lock up the building for the night.
Yeah, so he runs in, and then all the workers come out, and they lose him.
Yep.
The beggars tell, like, the division leaders, like, hey,
he's... Der Schranker.
Yep, he's in the building. You guys might want to get here and get him.
Yeah, so the safe cracker comes with a bunch of his criminal friends. To the building. And first step, we gotta capture the watchmen.
Yeah. Take all the watchmen.
There's some torture.
Yeah, a little bit of torture. They gotta torture one to figure out how many watchmen they need to take out in the building. Which they do successfully.
Yeah, they capture two more watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
This is like where the movie really starts picking up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very exciting. They're searching the building.
It's a little heisty. Almost.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And they're just so much more organized than police, just everyone having clear assignments and tasks. They have the blueprints. There's this cool thing with like the time clock, and they have the diagram for like how the circuitry works, because they need to like match the time, or else the alarm will get tripped and notify the police.
Yeah.
They have the key ring. They have these giant chunky keys.
Yeah.
They're just like a square cut out of a metal thing. Keys. Key technology has gotten technology. Better. Balloon technology, not so much.
They can't open any of the doors on their hunt for the predator. So what we see them do, at least one guy... He kind of breaks the floor. He drills into the floor to get into the room.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. They're in the basement, first floor, second floor. And then they hear banging in the attic. And that's where Beckhardt is, trying to, like, quietly escape. Trying to, like, loosen the screws with his knife. And the knife breaks. And then, there's, like, only a door separating them now. Right. Yep. They're very close, and now he's hiding in like this little like wooden area. I don't know exactly what to call it. It's just a bunch of junk in there. And one of the watchmen is able to like pull the alarm.
Well, yeah, because one of the guys runs down to tell his friend who's watching the hostages, the watchman, to say, hey, we got him. He's in the attic. And at that moment, one of the watchmen trips the alarm.
Yeah.
And it's a cool tech. Speaking about technology, the alarm's really cool. I don't understand how it works, but it's like this like ticker tape with like hole punches.
Yeah.
That somehow notifies the police.
Mm-hmm. So now the police are notified and they have like 3 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. To get the guy and clear the area.
They do it.
And yeah, and they almost give up.
Mm-hmm.
He's like right there and they're like, no, let's just do it real quick. And then they have a minute left and then they get him. They nab him. They throw him in a bag.
Yeah.
They throw him in a sack and haul him out with like seconds to spare.
And they all make it out except for Franz.
Yes, except for Franz, who was the guy that dug a hole in the floor.
Yeah, and you get this cool shot where he's emerging from the hole and it turns out it's police on the other end.
Yeah.
That shot reminded me of a similar one that Wes Anderson used in Grand Budapest Hotel during the prison escape. Yeah, this next part is one of those momentum killers because the heisty office building scene was so exciting, and now we get an extended scene of Chief Inspector Lohman talking to Franz
and other police officers pretty much.
Yeah, try to figure out what all the criminals were doing.
Yeah, it's just like it's a bit of a drag where like the police are just clueless and they're just like they didn't take anything. They didn't take any money. What were they doing down by the coal? Like, what were they looking for? And then they come up with this scheme because Franz won't talk.
Right.
They come up with this scheme to, like, pin a murder on him.
Yeah.
A fake murder.
Mm-hmm.
And Franz falls for it.
Yeah, they trick him.
They trick him. And he's just like, yeah, I don't want any part of that. I'll tell you everything.
Yeah. We got Becker and we took him to an abandoned distillery.
Mm-hmm. And then we go to the abandoned distillery.
Yes, and this is the cool scene where Becker shows up and then the camera like pans to show everyone that's down there. And it's just a huge group of criminals.
Of criminals, of men and women.
Fritz Lang insisted on casting real criminals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dope.
To get the authentic look.
That's dope.
Yeah.
And it's just, I didn't see this happening. Mm-hmm. It was really shocking, really cool to be like, you're going to be judged by the people, by the community,
by the criminals.
Yeah. By the criminals. And also what was really cool is that they gave him a defense.
Yeah, they gave him a defense and attorney.
They gave him a defense that actually defended him too. And he's just like, who are you criminals? Like, who are you to judge me? Like, and we get this really great monologue from Peter Lorre as Beckhardt, where he pretty much explains that he can't help himself. There's this voice at him that is yelling at him constantly to do it, and it only quiets when he's doing it. And then it starts all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to do it. He has to quiet that voice. But no one feels any remorse for him in that room.
No, they want him dead.
They want him dead.
This whole thing reminds me of part of the fun, I guess, of watching this is to just try to spot things that influenced. In Dark Knight Rises, how like when Bane takes over, the criminals like have their own, they hold their own trials.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah.
So yeah, they want him dead, but his lawyer says, hey, not while I'm here.
Yeah.
Listen, you're the judge, the guy being the judge, you're wanted on 3 counts of murder, of manslaughter, like, and you're just deciding that justice is to kill someone, that's never the answer. You help someone when they're sick.
Yeah. He was like, did you listen to this man? He said he can't help it. By his own admission, you don't kill a sick man. You turn him over to the doctor. But then, like, the women in the room start to speak up. And this picture so far has been very male-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to hear the women talk because it involves children.
The woman just said, kill him, right?
Yeah. The women are just like, kill him. Like kill him. Like, we don't... If we let him go, then he'll get off and then he'll do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So the women are completely on board with, like, offing this guy.
Yeah, and they're about to rush him. They get up to rush him.
Yeah.
But just in that moment, the police arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this sequence. You don't see the police come in. They all get up to start rushing Becker, but then they stop. And all the hands slowly go up.
Yeah.
It's like 50 people in that room. It's really visually appealing to see that kind of synchronized movement.
Yeah. And I guess he's kind of saved by the police, who place their hand on his shoulder and take him away.
Yeah, and then we see a bit of his real trial, in which we get to see the mothers of the deceased children crying.
Mm-hmm.
And Elsie's mom gets a line to finish the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is very reminding me of The Simpsons with Helen Lovejoy. Because Elsie's mom says, "No sentence will bring the dead children back. One has to keep closer watch over the children."
Think of the children.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the screen fades to black and she says, "All of you."
Yeah. And then there's no credits because it's 1931.
Yeah.
And that's him.
That's it.
That was quick.
Yeah.
That was quick, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot longer to watch than it is to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is M a movie or a film, Nate?
Well, I mentioned at the beginning how it's like a different experience it's watching different. This.
I feel like hindsight changes it, right?
I feel like if bit. I say film, I don't know if it's just because it's old and influential.
Yeah.
Like, I think if I were in 1931 and I saw it, it would be like, I don't know. It was apparently at its release very controversial. And I mean, as we know, some things happened very shortly after this movie came out in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It was banned for a couple decades.
Ooh, decades.
Yeah. I'm still going to go film. I don't think it's just because it's old.
Yeah.
And there's depth to it, definitely, in an old-timey way of being like, hey, we're going to show you these two different organizations and how they operate differently and maybe make you question why the more inept one is the authority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go film, too. I'd go film if I saw it in 1931. I'd go film today as well. Just because, I guess, some of that camera movement, some of that, I don't know. I guess if I saw it in 1931, I wouldn't be having this conversation.
They had podcasts then, I think, right?
They had radio. They had talk radio. But yeah, it was a really great discussion on criminals and just like, if the way the movie portrayed this heinous crimes without showing you the violence and then allowing him to have his moment.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, maybe I mean, I don't want to say I understand him, but it gave me the tools to be able to listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well,
of all the movies, I figured this would maybe be the most likely to be the one that we're talking about being a movie we both decided we don't like. I think that would be an interesting episode, but it was not M.
No, it was not M. It was close. I just had to adjust to like the sound, the lack of sound, pretty much. It's not a silent movie, but it gets pretty silent.
Yeah.
And not by choice, I would say, by circumstance more.
No, be grateful for the sounds that are in there, I think.
Yeah.
The way the movie was made is only done so because Fritz Lang was like he had like a wealthy benefactor whose money he accepted only on the condition that he could make his movie without any other outside input.
Mm-hmm.
So this is exactly the one he wanted to make.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
We will be back next week. I don't think that's going to be the one that we both don't like either.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I can speak from my experience. It's from a director. Although I've never seen this movie before, it's from a director that I've now seen a handful of movies of his, and he has a very distinct style that I am very on board for.
Mm-hmm.
It is an animated feature, so yes. That can be the hint.
Yeah.
Features a princess. That could be plenty of animated features.
So. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited to watch a lot of this director's work because I haven't seen any of it, like any of his work. So I'm very excited, and I'm very excited because we're going to have someone very, very, very cool on the next episode.
Yeah, returning guest.
Returning guest. Woo! I can't wait.
Yeah, email moviefilmpod@gmail.com. Check out Linktree with a dot in between the R and the first E /moviefilmpod to get all of our links.
Yes.
At moviefilmpod on all of our social media sites.
Yeah, hit that link.
Yeah. And come back next week for more movie film. I can't whistle, but if I could, I would do it now.
I don't remember the tune.
Nope.